At Baliff, we believe in partnering as a trusted advisor to reduce downtime, improve efficiency, and innovate the way our customers automate. With sensors, RFID, vision, networking, connectivity, and software solutions, we help customers create the foundation for a smart factory. We are dedicated to improving the competitive position of our customers by sharing our passion for automation.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the A3, the Robot Industry Podcast. I'd like to welcome listeners from all over the world, as far away as Moscow and Chicago, Illinois, and St. Thomas, Ontario. Thank you for subscribing to our podcast. I'm glad that you're here. Today, my guest is Will Healy III, and he's the marketing manager for the Americas for Baliff. And we met at one of Informa's virtual conferences. So we met online. So those people that don't believe in virtual conferences work, well, I've got news for you. And welcome to the podcast, Will.
I'm really glad to be here, Jim.
Hey, listen, I just want to just talk a little bit about you. Will Healy III is enthusiastic about smart manufacturing, IoT, and workforce development, a Purdue University mechanical engineer who loves to share his passion for automation. Will's a leader at Baliff Worldwide and with the Advanced Manufacturing Industry Partnership, the AMIP, in Cincinnati. He speaks from personal experience about the Industrial Revolution, managing culture change in organizations, bridging the manufacturing skills gap, and creating value through automation. And he is on Twitter at Will, Will, then the word automate. So, Will, I thought what we'd do is talk a little bit about uptime and downtime, since that's one of your value propositions. What's happening out there?
I mean, it's downtime is really killing manufacturers. There are a lot of studies out there, but I read a recent article from Industry Week that said each downtime incident costs $17,000 for each incident. I mean, that is a serious amount of money, right? I mean, you could buy a nice used car for $17,000. And speaking of cars, Thomasnet had a recent article that talked about downtime in the automotive industry averaging $22,000 per minute. Per minute, $22,000 per minute. And at first, I thought that number was bogus. But if you think about it, I took a tour of Toyota TMMK in Kentucky, and they make a Toyota Camry every 50 seconds. So, just in our introduction and our discussion here, they've made four Toyota Camrys while we're sitting here. So, you can see where $22,000 a minute actually seems like a low price of downtime in some of the cost of cars these days. So, really, downtime is the thing that can really help us improve our costs and our margins and help make our organizations more efficient. So we really focus on not just selling sensors for automation, but how do we get the right automation technology to improve downtime and stop downtime from happening. It's really shocking how much downtime's out there.
It's amazing. And I think, we're coming into this era where we hope to eliminate downtime. And of course, one of the things we're going to use to eliminate downtime is everything that we're going to talk about today. So what trends are you seeing out there? Because you're kind of on the ground floor, right?
It's interesting. I love this question. What trends do you see? And a lot of times you talk about trends or you hear people talk about smart manufacturing or Internet of Things. And as a manufacturer, a lot of you might think, great, they're going to talk about that again. But people are investing in this. And so there are really three business trends that I really see and three technical trends that I see. So the three business trends I see are really cultural transformations. I'll call it the silver tsunami. The baby boomers are retiring. And so you have a lot of millennials coming in and becoming managers in organizations and leaders in organizations, which we never really had before. So you got cultural transformation with those millennial managers. They want to do more e-commerce. So you're seeing more business-to-business e-commerce than you've ever seen before. And then you are seeing investment in automation and smart technology. And then the technologies people are investing in, we are literally, I'm going to quote our VP of sales in the US, we are seeing condition monitoring devices fly off the shelf. Fly off the shelf. And everyone is seeing that condition monitoring is an easy way to start doing smart manufacturing applications and dramatically reduce downtime With simple devices. So we're seeing that. We're seeing more machine vision than ever before. And honestly, Jim, the investment in sensors is really dramatic as well. There was a recent control engineering report that talked about IIoT budgets, and people spend $328,000 a year on average on their IIoT budgets. And sensors is the fastest, biggest part of that budget.
It's unbelievable, like you say, the number of things that are changing, how rapidly they're all changing.
Mm-hmm. It's really crazy.
So one of the things that we talked about in our warm-up was kind of the culture of automation and some of the things mm-hmm. that you're seeing when it comes to people bringing automation in, or maybe it's a new robot or a collaborative robot. What are you seeing from your perspective on the culture of automation changing?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric out there about how automation takes jobs, and what the research is actually showing and what's really interesting to me is people aren't investing in automation to get rid of jobs. They're investing in automation because they can't fill the positions they have. You know, there was a recent jobs report that had over 400,000 unfillable openings in manufacturing currently. So we have this kind of disparity between the millions of people out of work from our current recession and coronavirus situation. But we also have a situation in manufacturing where we have jobs we can't fill. So it's really an interesting time where automation is helping us actually do the work we need to do with the people we have, because we can't fill the positions we have. There are a number of executive surveys in manufacturing that show the reason executives are investing in automation is not to eliminate jobs, but to actually fill jobs they can't fill. So I think that's really an interesting statement of why people are investing in automation, and a surprising one, actually.
And do you see, too, where companies maybe introducing robotics into a place they've never had robotics before, how that affects the culture, too?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to, you know, everything is change. So technology management, change management, you know, I mentioned cultural transformation is a big business trend. You know, the cultural transformation is coming from two things. Of course, it's coming from generational shifts in the workforce, but it's also coming from bringing in new technology like robots into manufacturing. So you have to manage that. You have to make it a partnership between the workers and the maintenance people and the engineers. A company doing that really well here in Cincinnati that I've just seen really impressive things is ThyssenKrupp Bilstein. They're doing really great things. There's some good stories and they'd happily share their story, I'm sure, with other people. They made the collaborative robots they brought into their facility. They used those and they made those part of their culture. And even the workers have nicknames for the robots. Each of the robots has a name. They made the robots part of the culture and part of the people. And so the employees really embrace it there and have a positive attitude about the automation. They made it very clear the automation wasn't replacing people. The automation was to help them do their jobs better, to help them lift things or to help them assemble things so they didn't get as tired as quickly. And I think the people saw the value from that.
I remember in the early days of collaborative robots and even automation, oftentimes, this is pre-corona, of course, you come to the front desk and you'd sign in and they'd say, hey, don't put your company name, or don't wear jackets with the name of your robot company on there. So because people were really afraid, and factories are funny places. Like rumors start at the, and they just cut by lunch. Everybody mm-hmm. knows that there's a robot company in the building.
Right. Yeah, and you know, if you have a culture where with a fear of automation, that can be really a challenge. So before you bring the technology in, you really have to address why you're bringing the technology in with the workers. You know, it's an all levels of the organization. You have to work at all levels of the organization when you bring in new technology, whether it's a robot or it's an augmented reality application, or it's even sensors and you know, pneumatics and basic automation. Even without a robot, basic automation can be intimidating to workers if they don't know why the company's investing in it.
So I think here communication is really key, right?
Definitely.
Is that making sure that everybody kind of gets a feel for why, what are the goals, what are the objectives, and what are we thinking about?
Yeah, it's really funny. It all comes back to that basic premise of good business management and good change management. Communicate, communicate, communicate.
So what do you think are some of the effects that automation has on the workforce from kind of your experience? Because you're in a lot of plants, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. What's really nice about the automation is if we do it right, it makes the worker's job easier, and it helps the line supervisor, and it helps the maintenance technicians. We talk a lot about application specificity. So when we select automation equipment, picking the right materials for the right application. So for example, if you have a welding work cell where you have a robot doing the welding, robotic welding, like a automotive tier supplier structural. If you put a basic plastic automation prox in there and you have weld spatter going everywhere, if weld spatter gets on that prox, it dies. Or if you have an air cylinder that's not protected or coated to resist the weld spatter, it builds up on the rod, and then the rod sticks, and then you can't do anything. So picking the right components and the right automation components for the right application can really improve the application and make it survive longer. We started this whole thing talking about downtime and how do we improve downtime. Application specificity, you may pay a little more for those products, but they will last significantly longer when the right products are applied in the right application. And that's true not just of sensors like I talk about, but that's true for all the components that are in a work cell like that. As even the robots, right? Protecting the robots the proper way. So
absolutely. I've done a webinar on protecting the robots with the Robot Industry Association, and it's fascinating the number of tools that we need and we have to protect robots. And so in your case, protecting sensors or protecting cables is really, really important. I mean, you'll sell more sensors if they're not protected, but really what it does is it just causes a lot of angst.
Right. Yeah. And for me, that's really, my very first sales call ever was in a structural tier supplier in Maryland. They're not there anymore. But It was like the bowels of hell to me. It was really shocking. There was weld spatter everywhere. There was dirt and dust and smoke, and it was dark, and it was really shocking. But it doesn't have to necessarily be like that. And they had sensors failing everywhere. They had a sensor that failed three times a shift, Jim. So think about that. Three times a shift, three shifts a day, that's nine sensors a day. If you're operating, let's say 360 days a year, maybe you're off a couple of days, you're talking thousands of sensors in one location. And there could be thousands of sensors in the plant. So, they were spending tens of thousands of dollars on one location for one sensor application because they weren't using the right thing in that application. And that was the norm to them. They didn't really think that they could change that paradigm. So we really believe in how can we really improve that, and how do we work with people to improve their processes and their decision-making process so that they select the right application-specific technology so they don't have that downtime. So
one of the things that kind of has been a constant theme, it seems, in this podcast is attracting talent with automation. Is that something that you are seeing?
Yeah, for sure. I think, attracting talent in any way possible. just for example, Baloff's in Northern Kentucky, just outside of Cincinnati. And there are tons and tons of manufacturers there. There are tons of warehouses there. You can get one day to basically, and most of the United States, most of the manufacturing base is one day shipment away from Cincinnati. So it's a prime location to have a distribution or warehousing facility. And so what that means is there's a lot of demand for workforce. And so how do you attract people? And automation is one of those things. And the reason automation is attractive is because of that silver tsunami I talked about earlier, right? That transition from baby boomers to Generation Z, which is like 1991 and or 1997 and younger, and then the millennials. you know, Gen X, if you're a Gen Xer out there, I'm not overlooking you, but Gen X is wildly underrepresented in the workforce. And so really the dominant generations that are coming in are the millennials and the Generation Z. And the reason I bring the generations up is because Gen Z wants to work with technology. If you don't have automation in your plant, they're not going to be as excited to work there. They're not going to be interested in staying there long term unless you're investing in new technology, right? Gen Z's had a cell phone in their hand their whole life.
Sure.
They've had internet their whole life. They've had YouTube their whole life. I mean, they just think and act and interface with technology differently. So if we're not advancing in our technology, then it's really hard to attract that workforce.
So. And I think things like clean, organized factories are really, really important. And mm-hmm. like you say, looking under the hood, because these kids are smart and they that you can't fool them. Mm-mm.
Yeah, and they expect technology. Like, why, in their mind, why wouldn't you use better technology? It's making life better for the workers. It's making life better for your production. It's reducing your downtime. It's improving your visibility. It's improving your flexibility. It's improving your efficiency. So why wouldn't you use technology? In their mind, that's really what they're thinking. And so they're concerned about the longevity of your organization if you're not investing in automation. So it's something to really think about as we work towards all of this. You know, how are we investing and how are we attracting people? Technology is a big component of that. But even then, it's hard to get kids to think about manufacturing, Jim. It's hard to get them to consider manufacturing as a career. I'm happy to talk about that too. There's really, we always think of traditional talent pipelines. Like, what would you consider a traditional talent pipeline? Where are people hired?
Yeah, you know what? It's kind of a tricky place because with the internet, now everybody is everywhere and you can look on a job within minutes and find a whole bunch, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Like LinkedIn is a mm-hmm. huge area for people to look for employment, seeing what's happening out there.
Yep. And I mean, you know, like you've got college students, you're trying to hire, you're out recruiting at job fairs at colleges, you're, you know, hiring co-ops or interns, maybe you have an apprentice program, you know, these are the more kind of traditional places where we're getting people, right? But we're not getting enough people. So we need to start thinking about underutilized pipelines, and we need to start thinking about expanded pipelines and places where we could get people that aren't traditional for us. So, you know, one of the underutilized pipelines that I see is, you know, 20% of high school graduates are non-college. They don't go to college.
I did not know that.
Right. So where are they going? How can we secure them? We've got good jobs with good pay, with good benefits, and they don't know that we're an option for them in manufacturing. Did you know 41% of kids who go to college don't finish a college degree in 6 years? So there are 41% of the kids that are coming out with some college. What's interesting about the some college kids is, you know, they probably can do math, so they can do shop math. They probably can read and read fairly well because they made it through some college. And so these kids are ripe for some of our skilled positions where maybe you just need a certificate, you know, or they need some basic training. So 41% of the kids that go to college don't finish. So they should be a target for us. How do we find them and how do we work towards them? That's something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, is how do we get those kids that don't go to college and how do we get those kids that got some college? Because they would really be choice individuals for our manufacturing positions.
So we have to get innovative, right? We have to mm-hmm. Get in into the community. We have to communicate better to these people. We have to talk to guidance counselors or mm-hmm. or we have to hang out where they hang out, right? And I think we have to be a bit more creative in our approaches to saying, hey, this is manufacturing is a great industry, it's a great career, but unless you kind of see the inside of a plant where a guy who's delivering food or something isn't going to see that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely, Jim. And like, we have to engage the schools. Every manufacturer has a school, I bet, within 10 miles of their office. It's probably a fair assumption. So yep. Unless you're real rural and there's only one school in the county or something, but most manufacturers probably have a school that's in range, right? Your workers have kids and their kids go to school someplace. So how do we engage the teachers? You know, a lot of manufacturers are offering what's called a teacher externship, where they invite the teacher in the summer to job shadow for a week in the factory and learn about how awesome manufacturing is. They offer tours to the local schools or interviews of engineers or maintenance people so that the school kids can learn about the types of jobs in manufacturing, job shadows or even high school jobs, allowing kids to help on some of the simpler tasks in the factory to get exposure to manufacturing as a job. And then, Manufacturing Day run by the National Association of Manufacturers. Manufacturing Day is a great way for a manufacturer to participate and share about how awesome manufacturing is with schools and with the community. And so we have to think about how we engage schools better and create a positive experience, just like with those guidance counselors you talked about.
And it's almost like a push into the STEM pipeline. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at things like getting involved with FIRST Robotics and sure. Doing those tours, or even an open house. I can just imagine mm-hmm. all the parents going, hey, there's an open house at XYZ company. Why don't you go in there? So it's almost like we have to reach the marketing department and the human resources department and the plant manager and CEO and say, hey, guys, we should start spending some money on this. Let's sponsor a couple of buses. Let's get a couple of tours. Let's do this. And let's do this programmatically. Like, let's do this every year.
Yep. Yeah. And, it may feel overwhelming, Jim. Most manufacturers have less than 100 employees. So it may feel overwhelming for you to get involved with that. But what I will tell you is, just like in Cincinnati, I'm part of the AMIP you mentioned in my bio. We are a regional industry partnership where we're a group of manufacturers that work with schools, and we help coordinate these kinds of events and these kind of interfaces for manufacturers that are too small to try to figure it out on their own. So getting involved with your local industry partnership, they're all over the country. There are hundreds of them organized. NAM actually is a really great site for finding those organizations. In Ohio, every state pretty much has one of these manufacturer organizations. If you get involved with them, they make it easy for you to do this kind of local engagement with your schools. They help you and give you resources and support you and how to do it effectively and efficiently.
I wrote a blog, and this reminds me of this kind of grow your own, right? Where mm-hmm. a lot of companies had, I think in the old days, and this happened at a company I used to work with, we had a great apprenticeship program. And it's just was something where you actually didn't actually have to hire very much, because guess what? Your new employees are already working for you.
Yeah, definitely. And the local tech schools and the local community colleges, they are wildly interested in partnering with you to create curriculums and support you with a pipeline like you're talking about, Jim.
And are you seeing, one of the things that I'm very interested in, and I think you might be too, is this whole idea of mentorship mm-hmm. at a facility? Because you say, you've got all the baby boomers retiring, and how do we handle that transfer of knowledge? And I think millennials would be very interested to be partnered with a mentor on the shop floor. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely, Jim. When you do research about how to create millennial leaders, I've done a decent amount of research of that. How do you create successful millennial leaders? One of the major things they want, and one of the major things they need, to be honest, is a mentor and someone who can advise them and help direct them. They need someone to provide immediate feedback. Their whole life, they've had immediate feedback. Their whole life's been learning through games. We could talk a whole podcast about gamification of work, but their whole life's been through immediate feedback and games and mentoring. And so they need that, and they want that as they get formed into leaders in the organization. They want someone to bounce ideas against. And as a millennial myself, I want that too. So having that helps you and makes you more powerful as a leader when you have someone to sound your ideas off of.
So I really like the way this is going, and I think that there's a kind of a continuing conversation that we should have on attracting and retaining workers for manufacturers. And I think it is that table grows, right? I think it is human resources, and maybe we need to go after everybody for a bit of budget money. Any other thoughts on that that you have?
Yeah, I think there's one last thought. I'm going to steal two, if you don't mind. I've got two thoughts. And the first one is short, but very powerful, and something we need to take seriously, is women. You know, the Deloitte just came out with a study of women in manufacturing, and only 29% of the manufacturing workforce is women. But the U.S. labor force, 47% is women. So women are wildly underrepresented in manufacturing. And so as we're looking for employees and we're looking for workforce, manufacturers really should be considering women and working towards getting more women into their workforce, because that is a wildly underutilized segment of the workforce that we're not using in manufacturing. And the second thing that we should be thinking about, and we could spend a whole podcast talking about this, Jim, is what I would like to call the expanded pipeline. And that's things like veterans. And, you know, there are a lot of veteran advocate partners out there, second chance and returning citizens, disabled advocates. There's an awesome company in Wisconsin that I learned about that makes parts for the automotive industry called Beyond Vision, where they hire entirely people with vision disabilities. And that is a really impressive and cool company to look at how can we take that idea and expand on it. And then even minority advocate partners or legal immigrant partners in communities. We have some manufacturers in Cincinnati that they hired some supervisors. Even if English isn't a strong language for the workers, when they have supervisors that can speak the language of the immigrant community, they're some of their most reliable and steadfast workers in their manufacturing plant now. And they have a community inside their factory that even recruits its own to work in the factory. And so they have way less workforce issues because the community is recruiting its own. And they support each other. You know, a lot of times the workforce troubles we have in manufacturing are people being able to get to work every day and, you know, breaking down of cars or transportation plans. So by having a community like that, we've actually found that the community supports the people to be able to get to work on time and get to work every day. So that's really an interesting one as well. So in summary of all of that, you know, we have the traditional pipelines, but there are underutilized pipelines like women and some college kids and then all these expanded talent pipelines that I just mentioned. So there's a lot more than just going to a college career fair to get your employees to be thinking about.
You know what? And this is not rocket science, right? Mm-mm. It's putting a plan together, it's executing the plan, and it's measuring the plan, and, you know, getting a bit of budget money and making these connections where you are reaching out to unique communities. And it's not just a feel-good thing, right? These people are actually going to work. They're actually going to show up to their jobs, which is a big problem today in manufacturing. Yep. So, no, I think those are awesome, awesome points. And I can feel a blog or another podcast coming up. Well.
Definitely.
Hey, listen, I want to thank you for coming on the Robot Industry Podcast. How can people get a hold of you if they'd like to find more?
Yeah, absolutely. If you find me on LinkedIn, that's really the best way. So I'm on there as Will Healy, the third III. If you find me on LinkedIn there, you can also tweet at me at Will Automate, or you're welcome to send me a text message, 859-496-6627, or an email is probably the worst way to get a hold of me.
You know what? I know, because I tried to get a hold of you and you responded first on LinkedIn. So yep. So kudos to LinkedIn. Anyway, thanks again.
Yep. Thank you, Jim. I really appreciate the time today.
Our sponsor for this episode is Earhart Automation Systems. Earhart builds and commissions turnkey automation solutions for their worldwide clients. With over 80 years of precision manufacturing, they understand the complex world of robotics, automated manufacturing, and project management, delivering world-class custom automation on time and on budget. Contact one of their sales engineers to see what Earhart can build for you. And their info at earhartautomation.com. And Earhart is Earhart automation.com. I'd like to thank and acknowledge our partner, A3, the Association for Advancing Automation. A3 is the umbrella association for the RIA, AIA, MCMA, and A3 Mexico. And these four associations combined represent almost 1,300 automation manufacturers, component suppliers, systems integrators, end users, research groups, and consulting firms throughout the world that are driving automation forward. I'd like to thank our partner, Painted Robot. Painted Robot builds and integrates digital solutions. They're a web development firm that offers SEO and digital social marketing and can set up and connect CRM and other ERP tools to unify marketing, sales, and operations. And you can find them at paintedrobot.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with me at the Robot Industry Podcast, like Will, you can find me, Jim Beretta, on LinkedIn. And Beretta is spelled B-E-R-E-T-T-A. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, and be safe out there. Today's podcast was produced by Customer Attraction Industrial Marketing, and I'd like to thank my nephew Chris Gray for the music, Chris Colvin for audio production, my partner Janet, and our partners A3 and Painted Robot, and our sponsor, Earhart Automation Systems.